Senate Committee on Health and Human Services to order, and we'll open a public hearing and just a public hearing so far on Senate Bill 267. And they'll have staff introduce the bill.
Senator, Senate Bill 267, and I will be brief with this since it's somewhat of a, can be a complicated bill, and I'll let our presenters give a more detailed description. And just as a change from your information printed, this does not have a fiscal impact. We just got word for lunch. What Senate Bill 267 does is affect insurance in a number of ways. It increases the minimum requirements for capital and surplus holdings of certain insurers and healthcare practitioners. It repeals a couple different statutes which are in your packet encircled. It establishes certain dates and deadlines for insurers and healthcare services to possess and maintain certain amounts of capital surplus. Gives certain authority to the director in decision making about requiring a healthcare contractor to possess additional capital and surplus if deemed necessary. Authorizes the director to make other decisions such as determining reserves of for insurers to maintain for unearned premiums. Certain decision making over loan policy payments. And increases state authority to compel security from alien reinsurers to enforce the state requirements regarding these trust funds. Also allows, amongst other things, assessment of member employers of multiple employee welfare arrangements, or MUAs, kind of based on capital and surplus requirements for such trusts. There's a little bit of background. The Department of Consumer and Business Services is the state entity that regulates companies that sell insurance and agents. Companies are regularly examined to determine their financial soundness to write policies and to pay off those policies when necessary. Workers, right now, most companies must not have less than $1 million in certain capital surplus to cover their policies. For workers' compensation, insurers are required to have at least $3 million. Healthcare pay, contractors are required to hold no more than $500,000. Insurance companies are often reinsured by other companies to cover specific provisions and policies or to cover claims in the event that the company becomes insolvent. And right now, under current law, Oregon does not require, allow insurers to reduce liabilities or add assets under certain situations that our presenters will describe in detail. Multiple employer welfare arrangements are health insurance plans developed by a group of employers as stipulated under federal law. And right now, Oregon law requires MIWAs, or these multiple employer welfare arrangements, to maintain minimum reserves or collect proportional amounts from each member employer to keep a certain level of surplus monies.
Okay, thank you. We have Charlie Nikoloff, Marion County. And Lewis Littlehales from the Insurance Division here, and let you go in order of how you prefer.
Thank you, Senator. For the record, my name is Charles Nikoloff. I am the Deputy Administrator of the Insurance Division. And with me is Lewis Littlehales, Program Executive of the Insurance Division, and also author, bill drafter of this particular legislation. Your committee administrator did a nice overview of what this bill is. It's quite complicated, and I'm going to try to see if I can make it a little bit simpler for you. I'd like to just start by perhaps defining a few terms so that when you hear me utter them, they won't seem that strange. First of all, domestic insurers are insurance companies formed and organized in Oregon. Foreign insurance companies are insurance companies organized in another state doing business here and elsewhere. And alien insurers are insurance companies organized outside of the United States but doing business here.
Not necessarily in outer space.
No, not yet anyway. You'll also hear the terms capital and surplus and risk-based capital. I'd like to touch on those a little bit before I get into the meat of the bill. Basically, capital and surplus is the difference between a company's assets and liabilities. And it serves a couple of very important purposes. A lot of the insurance business liabilities are based on estimates. So if a company believes its liability for unpaid claims is a certain amount, and we find out later that it was inadequate, that capital and surplus is a cushion to absorb that understatement of reserves. On the other hand, you could also have assets that fluctuate in value. And today, a bond or a stock may be worth something. That price tomorrow might be something less. So this cushion there is to absorb those variances from day to day. It also is there for one very important purpose, and that is to fund the liquidation or rehabilitation of a company should it become insolvent. And that's extremely important to us and to taxpayers, because in Oregon, when an insurance company becomes insolvent, we have these mechanisms to take care of the policyholders in most instances, called guarantee associations. These guarantee associations basically are funded with general fund money. So when an insurance company in this state becomes insolvent, either the general fund pays for it or the policyholders and creditors pay for it by not getting paid. So it's very important that we have adequate capital and surplus so we don't have insolvencies, or at least minimize the insolvencies when they do occur. The current standards in the law, in some respects, are more than 25 years old, and a dollar isn't what it used to be, let's face it. So we propose to increase, over a period of 5 years for existing companies, the capital and surplus requirements from the amounts you see in my testimony. It depends on the type of company, but in some cases there are very hefty increases, but we believe deservedly so. As I say, there'll be a five-year phase-in, and even after the phase-in, for those companies who still aren't there, there is provision in the bill to allow us to work with the company and give them extensions. It isn't our desire to put anybody out of business who's already here. We just want to see that safety net increased. After insurance companies become licensed, the minimum capital and surplus needed thereafter is basically determined by a group of formulas and ratios called risk-based capital. And risk-based capital attempts to measure other things besides just fluctuation in assets. They try to measure things like insurance risk, credit risk. In any event, these formulas are produced annually, and depending on where those levels set, certain things might have to happen. There are action levels in risk-based capital called company action level, to regulatory action level, to authorized control level, to mandatory control level. These are various benchmarks at which point the insurance regulator of the state, in this case, Oregon, must take or shall take some kind of action to alleviate whatever problems causing these levels to be pierced. Currently, all property and casualty companies, the folks that ride automobile and fire and homeowners, the risk-based capital applies to them. Life and health insurers already, this applies to them. What the bill does is bring into the fold the 24 healthcare service contractors that are licensed in Oregon that don't have risk-based capital requirements imposed on them today. So that they will be brought into the fold. So we have the minimum capital and surplus requirements to start, and then after they've been in business, the RBC will control what kind of numbers they need to make sure that safety level is there. The insurance commissioners of the country are organized into an association called the NAIC, or National Association of Insurance Commissioners. This entity has no power or authority of its own. It serves there as advisory and a place to formulate models and those kinds of things. There's been a concern over many years that the accounting for insurance companies varies from state to state, to the point where it was hard for insurance companies to deal on a multi-state basis, as well for the regulators to have a basis acceptable here and not in California or New Jersey or some other state. So over the years, they've designed a standardization, which we call a codification. And during the last year, the insurance division formed an advisory group, met with the insurance industry of the state, and went through every single promulgation of codification. And where we differed from the standards, we identified the statutes that needed to be changes, came to agreement, and what you have before you now is the result. There's about five or six changes in the insurance code needed for codification. That'll put Oregon on the same basis as most other states are or will soon become. And it'll also help our Oregon domestics so they don't have competing types of principles of accounting to deal with from state to state. third item that this bill covers is reinsurance, as mentioned by your administrator. Reinsurance is a method where one insurance company shares its risks with another because of its concern about concentration of risk in one area or a fear of a catastrophe loss or any other unpredictable event. So an insurance company, and also because the insurance code only allows them to retain a certain amount, an insurance company will share that risk for sharing part of the premium. In some cases, those reinsurance credits are with foreign or alien insurance companies, and the bill also addresses how those credits can and shall be allowed and recognized. The second portion, and probably more important to Oregon companies, is what's called credit for reinsurance because of cut-through arrangements. A cut-through arrangement is a mechanism where where an insurance company grants to a lender or another third party the ability to seek recovery in the event they are unable to pay a loss. Let me give you an example. If company A insures your home, and your lender says, well, your company A is nice, but I want some more security. I would like to have a backup to the policy in case you're not around to pay, over and above perhaps the guarantee fund. So the insurance company issues what's called a cut-through endorsement to the lender. And that means if company A isn't around any longer for whatever reason, the lender then can go to the New York reinsurer or Florida reinsurer where they are and say, here's my cut-through endorsement, pay me directly because the insurance company that sold me the policy is no longer around. We now will want to allow credit or acknowledge that in the financial statements of insurance companies because they are no longer really carrying all of the risk, and we should recognize that. So the bill does that as well. The last piece of the bill affects what are called MEWAs, or Multiple Employer Welfare Arrangements. And in this state, we probably should say arrangement. We only have one. And this is basically an organization of like employers who self-insure or form an organization that insure, and they then for health insurance purposes. And from time to time, these companies could become impaired or insolvent. And since there is no guarantee fund for them, since there are no stockholders per se, we need some kind of backup mechanism. So we sat down with the one MEWA we had and worked out an agreement to have an assessment ability. So if the MEWA becomes insolvent, not able to pay its bills to its subscribers, in effect its employees, the commissioner as receiver can assess the employer up to 1 month's premium and raise sufficient funds, hopefully, to pay the claims off. Now that, in a nutshell, is what the bill does, and I have glossed over a lot of it only because it is complicated, and I want to leave time for questions and let you pose anything you'd like at us. Now, if there's something I haven't covered, I think I've covered one. Yes, there is.
Senator Carter, I'm sorry.
It's probably two questions. Number one, what made this bill necessary at this particular moment, other than the fact that you're codifying some things? The other one is, why the marine hull insurers are the object of this or included in this, in repealing their $500,000 requirement?
Chairman, Senator Carter,
$500,000 surplus, I was just correcting myself.
Answer to your first question, there is no particular instance that's causing this bill to be brought at this time, other than we believe from watching the industry and the trends and looking at our own statutes and seeing what's happened in other states, it's a realization, if you will, that $500,000, in some cases less than that, just isn't enough anymore. Mm-hmm. With inflation alone, if you could have started a company with $500,000 in 1975, you still can do it today. It doesn't acknowledge the fact that the dollar doesn't buy what it used to be, or what it used to buy. And other factors that have gone into it is the fact that we've had some insolvencies in the state. And we were quite lucky that we had sufficient assets to pay for the liquidation. But there were still cases where folks didn't get paid. And that's because that safety net wasn't large enough. In the case of Marine, they're brought into the fold like any other line of business. Lewis, am I missing anything?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carter, you're asking about the statute that was repealed?
Yes.
About the reciprocal, marine reciprocal insurers. That was a ended up being a temporary section allowing reciprocal insurers of that particular class to bring its capital and surplus up to the level that was meant for all reciprocal insurers. And you'll, as you look at that statute, you'll see that they were supposed to have brought it up by, I think it was 1999. So the statute is expired. Okay. Its time has passed.
So I was wondering, with that being such a dangerous business, and in case of some kind of accident or something, $500,000 seemed to be a small amount with so many people, and I was wondering if it is unnecessary today as it might have been yesterday.
Well,
they are one that we're bringing up to 1 million. So I think, if I'm understanding your question correctly, that would make it more, you know, more substantial, stronger.
So you're not just repealing it, you're...
No, that's right, excuse me, no. Because it said, once that statute says that once you meet the level, then you're subject to this other, the one, well, it's not, now it's 500,000, it would be 1 million.
Then that's
for reciprocal insurers generally.
Great.
Yes, excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Mesley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How do insurance companies raise that surplus capital? And there's one question. Secondly, what impact does that have on their stock value?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, depending on the type of company, if it's a stock company, the company can raise additional capital by selling shares. If it's a mutual, it'll have to either borrow funds or in some respect perhaps demutualize. We only have four mutuals in Oregon. But there are mechanisms for raising capital. As far as the value of their shares, keep in mind that this capital and surplus is there for is a safety net. But if it's not used, it still belongs to the owners. That money still belongs to the shareholders. If the company were to unwind and go out of business and we pay off its bills, it still goes back to the stockholders. It basically considered as a larger commitment up front rather than in arrears. So the money's still there. The state isn't taking it or seizing it as far as using it for its own purposes. If it still belongs to the shareholders and always will, assuming there still is capital surplus there.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up.
Yes, Senator Mesley.
I understand that, but there's always a cost to capital. And if it's just a matter of selling stock, that spreads out the return of the company. So they're going to have to generate more income. And I'm not saying this isn't a necessary thing to do. I'm just saying it spreads that income out over more stocks. And so I would think that would have an impact on their ability to sell stock and the value of the stock they have.
I think it depends how they approach it. If what you're saying is true, selling stock after the fact can have dilution effects to it. But right. If shares are sold equal to the current equity, it could be a wash and no effect. So I think it has to look at it on a case-by-case basis. But you're right. There may be cases where that can happen, and we're aware of it. But at the same time, we believe the trade-off here is well worth it. And it's really to the investor's interest to have a solvent company as well. So we think it's a win-win, although we are, in effect, asking for a larger commitment up front than the law currently allows.
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, there was one thing I wanted to mention before we get away before I forget anyway. This bill does, there is a need for an amendment. We noted a drafting error on our part that left some of the requirements for uniform treatment of these RBC filings sort of in limbo. We've not had time to discuss it with the insurance industry and the folks that it affects, so a copy will be given, or if it has been given, to your administrator to have legislative counsel look at it, but we're not prepared to really deal with it, other than to alert you that we found an error on our own and we need to fix it.
Go ahead, Mr. Littlehill.
Any other questions?
Guess not. So we just have.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Are there any insurance companies going to testify?
We didn't have any signed up here. This is all the sign-up we have today, and if they're going to be working on some other issues and bring it back, why, probably won't go further with the public hearing today until we get all the final.
Thank you.
We've evidently exhausted our testifiers today, so I'll close the work or the public hearing on Senate Bill 267. We will not have a public hearing today on Senate Joint Memorial 1. Apparently, there is another bill, something similar to this, on its way, and they wish to confer between the two of them before we bring it up, so there's no sense in taking a lot of time. And we have no bills to introduce, and we should have had Mr. Tryon's here today, and we would have gotten his report in and gotten out of here still in good time, because at the best of our scheduling here, it turns out that we're through unless somebody has some real reason for staying down here in front of the crowd. Seeing none, we're adjourned.